Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for September 17th. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and with me back in cyberspace is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
In cyberspace, that is me, man. Nothing is going on that hasn't gone on before.
Really? Well, that's odd. Then why wake up tomorrow?
Oh, you're such an optimist. No.
Is that what you call it now?
Well, yeah, I had a bunch of words in a box, and that's the one I pulled out.
Oh, okay. Well, stuff that one back in and pull out something better. This week we're going to discuss the retirement of Tomoaki Kanemoto. I don't know, what do you like to call him, the Big Brother or the Iron Man? I like to call him Big Brother. You like to call him all right. And then we're going to discuss the possible MVPs for both leagues and touch on some other topics. So, let's start clearing the bases. I got you there, bud. Sorry. So what do you like to call him?
Kanemoto.
Oh, his name? Well, that's odd.
I don't have a nickname for him, really. I mean, I use the word Iron Man in the story I wrote about him, but...
Yeah, well, it was kind of a shocker this past Wednesday. Hanshin Tigers... maybe the icon player for that team for the past, well, for what?
Decade.
Yeah, for the past decade. Tomoaki Kanemoto decided that he was going to retire. Did you get to see the actual press conference? Did you see any highlights?
Bits and pieces. I take that back. It was just a decade because he arrived in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
So, did I get to see? I saw a little bit of it.
Yeah, it was kind of emotional. He just looked like he was, to me, he looked like he had mixed emotions the whole time. It didn't seem like he wanted to quit, but his body just won't let him go on and playing the way he's used to playing. And it just looked like he had no desire to go and be a DH or just be a pinch hang around and be a pinch hitter. And he was kind of torn. You know, he was saying, I'm retiring, but I'm not quitting, is the kind of attitude I took away from that press conference. I got to watch the whole thing.
Oh, nice. Well, I translated, you know, his questions, and it was kind of interesting because he's not very easy to translate.
He's not.
And he's very, but he says things that are very cool.
Yes, he does. In fact, there are three things I'll always remember about him, as a player, but not only as a player, but as a person. The thing that I started the job here in 2005, and the language that he used in the hero interviews and the language that he used when he was doing interviews, it was very distinguished, very cosmopolitan to me. It was not like a very typical athlete. He used some phrases that I had to go back and I had to look them up after the games because I didn't exactly know what he was talking about.
Right. Yeah, he's very dignified, and there's a lot of things that are very singular about his career. I think, you know, a number of people came out and said that, you know, he's a one-in-a-generation player, and that's probably true. I mean, you look at where he stands on the career, you know, in the career numbers.
Yeah, we'll get to some of those numbers later, yeah.
Okay, well, when we get to them, you'll notice something fairly interesting. And it was a bit of a shock to me, because he had been playing and the Tigers had said, you know, there was some discussion, I think, with Hanshin this year that would he be back? Would anybody want him back? And the Tigers said, yeah, we want him back.
Yeah, they said that, but, you know, I have to think that the new general manager, Nakamura, when he took over, that this has something to do with his takeover as well, that he talked about wanting to improve the defense, and I think they had a talk. I think he probably told him, hey, look, I don't think we can put you out in the field anymore, and we're just going to mainly use you as a pinch hitter. But I think they wanted him back.
That could well be. I think that's a likely scenario. And I didn't know what, you know, the Tiger, I'm just so used to the Tigers doing silly things. You know, I remember the big story. I mean, the big story was when his consecutive innings streak ended because he took himself
out of the game, yeah.
And his manager couldn't have done it. And everybody was saying, no, the manager can't do it. If it's Kanemoto, you just got to leave him in there until, you know, you carry him off on a stretcher.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this is Oh, this is really the essence of Japanese baseball, is you let people play regardless of whether they're any good, as long as their names are big enough.
Mm-hmm.
And
you've talked about that before.
Yeah. Sure. And there were people saying that I know Wakamatsu, Tsutomu Wakamatsu talked about a similar case when he was a player and he couldn't throw, and they kept him in the lineup just for something or other. And this has happened over and over and over again. So it's really difficult to it's hard to imagine him saying, yeah, well, I'm not doing anything, so take me out of the game.
Yeah, yeah. But the other thing that I'm going to remember about him, or there are two other things, but one is that swing.
Sure.
And I said it last week, he still has a terrific swing. He's a pull hitter. I mean, he pulls just about everything. In fact, I think I saw him walk up to a department store door and it said push, and he tried to pull that. But he pulls everything. I mean, it wasn't all about his offense out there. I think he's just not able to perform physically. And I think the injuries took the toll, and that's the thing that's going to kick him away. Now, the third thing I remember him, I'll always remember him for, good or bad. I'm not saying that it was good or bad, but he was not approachable. He was a hard guy to talk to, and particularly in 2005 when the Tigers were heading toward the Central League title, and they were playing they didn't have the playoff system at that time. The Central League didn't. They just went straight to the Japan Series, and it was impossible to talk to him.
Right. Well, he's one of those players. Now, I have the feeling that he's one of those players who won't talk on a game day.
Mm.
And I never approached him on those rare, I don't know, four or five or six instances when I had the opportunity, when it was a practice day. But no, he certainly has he has the air of somebody who doesn't want to talk to you.
Yeah, whether it's good or bad, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I mean, some people, that's the way they are. I remember Ryan Vogelsong was on pitching day. He was not a person you even say hello to. So
yeah, that, I've gotten that a few times. However, on the other hand, I do remember players who had a scowl to keep people away. In fact, a lot of players have a scowl to keep people who don't have the nerve to talk to them away.
Yeah.
And if you talk to them, they're pleased as punch to talk to you. So yeah. Kimiyasu Kudo is like that, and I can think of about a dozen players who are like that. Troy Neal used to be like that with Oryx.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a scowl, and then you come up and you say hello, and big smile breaks out, and nice to meet you.
Right, right. Well, I'm really sad that he's leaving. I mean, like I said, I would much rather see him go to the Pacific League and be a DH. I don't think he's the kind of guy who would hang around like Tomonori Maeda with the Hiroshima Carp and be this pinch hitter extraordinaire and come up in big game situations and do that maybe three or four times a week. And that's about it. I don't think he's that kind of guy.
Well, I think that is, yeah, that's probably the best answer to the question of why. He had such an interesting career, and one of the, you know, of all the questions in the question and answer, two stand out in my mind. One was somebody asked him, is it the injuries this year? And he says, no, it's been, he said, if this year if you say this year is misery, which it has been, then my career began with 3 years of misery and it ended with 3 years of misery.
Yeah, I heard that part. That struck me too. And I think for me, I guess it's down to interpretation. For me, I think he was saying, look, most of baseball is difficult. Most of it, because you don't have success. I mean, hitting the ball 3 times out of 10 is not really a lot more success. It's more a struggle than it is success. If you look at the batting average, even a 300 hitter, in terms of that kind of success that you can assign value to, let's say.
Well, that's a different quote I was going to get to in a moment.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, that's all right. Anyway, just to finish that one, not briefly, as anybody knows this subject with me, but, you know, for 3 years, he came out of two things. One thing, which I've said before, he's a part of a fairly, at least famous for some people, draft, which was the fourth round in 1991. And Ichiro Suzuki was in that draft, and Norihiro Nakamura was in that round. The other big name was Shinjiro Hayama, who has not announced his retirement yet. Okay, so those four were in that draft round. There were a couple of other moderate players, and there's a guy who's now an umpire. anyway, so that was interesting. And what's interesting is he came out of Tohoku Fukushi Daigaku. He was the fourth round pick of the Carp. He's from Hiroshima.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't a big surprise. But here's a guy. He's 22 or 23. I guess he's 23 in his first year. And he basically, they basically put him on ice for 3 years. They didn't know what to do with him. The Carp had a very crowded outfield.
Yeah, you've talked about that on the show before. In fact, Marty Brown, the Marty Brown comment is my favorite.
Well, they had Marty Brown. I'm just saying, in the outfield, they had Marty Brown, and they had Tomonori Maeda, who came along a couple of years before and was established. They had Koichi Ogata, who was the Carp's center fielder, second baseman. They had a whole bunch of veteran outfielders who really weren't that good. They did have a guy named Ryuzo Yamasaki, who's a brilliant player. He was a right fielder, third baseman. You know, it was a great, great team when he came up. But here they had a guy they just didn't know what to do with, it was just a typical Carp pattern. Not only did they not know what to do with him, I'm sure had no clue how good he was.
Yeah.
This is something a lot of teams do it, but most teams don't do it to the extent the Carp have done it, which is not know how good their players are sometimes until they get rid of them. Stars are pretty bad too, and the Dragons to some degree are in that category as well. Tigers as well.
Right.
But anyway, he was a fourth round pick, and he, you know, the way players are picked, the way players earn a job, to quote my friend, is basically to get hot.
Mm-hmm. Start producing and produce regularly, and don't stop.
You either earn a job by being well connected and having a good name, in which case you're allowed to, you're given a job and you're allowed to lose it. Or you earn a job by essentially getting hot at the right time,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's in spring training or whatever. You get hot when people care whether you get hotter. Anyway, yeah, Kanemoto, like a dozen guys I can think of who just got it just took him a long time to get hot at the right time. And part of the problem was he didn't have playing time. They knew he was good enough to be on the first team roster, where they just left.
Right. And we're talking about a guy who eventually played 1,492 consecutive full games. It was noted as a world record in the newspaper, so I don't know. I guess we can say it is. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's in the Guinness Book of Records or not.
Well, I would think it is because nobody really cares to play that many games.
Yeah, no one in their right mind. He became the ninth player to reach 1,500 RBIs when he did that. He was the seventh player to reach 2,500 hits. In 2000, he hit 300, had 30 home runs and 30 steals. I think he was the last player to do that in Japan. If I saw that report correctly. Now he has 2,532 games played, I believe that's the case. And this is through Sunday's games. He's seventh all time in hits. He hit a home run on Sunday, number 475, that put him 10th on the all-time home run list. 1517. I think actually he, with the RBIs he had today, he moved up on the RBI list. And he's only 8 behind Shigeo Nagashima now. And I hope he catches and passes him.
Right.
I really, really hope he catches and passes him. It's only 8. He's probably going to get mostly pinch hitting assignments. But if there's some way, I think they said there were something like 15 games left for them. Man, if he can do that, that'd be nice for him. But I'll miss him. I mean, I badmouthed him, and I felt bad because we've been talking about him recently and saying how he can't throw. And
well, he can't.
He cannot. But I didn't just think he would walk away, and it really came as a shock.
And that gets, of course, to the second quote, which is the one which I know you're referring to. He said that since the time he started playing baseball when he was 10 years old, he found that 20 to 30% of the game has been joy, but the pursuit of that tiny fraction of joy, the result of that pursuit of that tiny fraction of joy is 70 to 80% of labor.
Yeah. And he said at the press conference that, you know, the numbers he has now, which I didn't even look at, they're not terrible. I thought he's hitting over 200, which is
right in the middle of the Tigers, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, on that team, that's pretty good. So he's hitting 258 with the home run today. So and it was a two-run home run. So and I say today, this is Sunday. Said he couldn't carry his head high. And that's the one comment that really struck me and really let you know. And you could see it on his face. You could see the pain on his face, you know, thinking, you know, I could if I was healthy enough. I know I could. And I think he can, too. I still think he could perform if he's healthy. But
I do, too. And I think the reason for the numbers are that basically once he took himself out of the game, he stopped getting his daily 3 and 4 at bats.
Mm-hmm. The ABs dropped, yeah, definitely.
And that it was really hard for him to stay as sharp as he had been used to staying just from playing in games.
Yeah. And then the other comment that really struck me was the fact that, and here's a guy who played in all these games. I think it was 2003 or maybe 2004 that Iwase hit him on the left wrist and broke it near the end of the season.
Okay.
And he came back the next day. They told a story on the news that he went to a hospital that didn't have, you know, it was at night.
And
it's in Hyogo Prefecture. And then he went to a hospital that didn't have MRI machines and didn't have a regular X-ray. And so he didn't know it was broken. So he went out to the park the next day and he played and he got a hit with one hand. You know, he hit it all right-handed. And of course, he pulled it into right center field. But anyway. And he does all this. You know, we just went through a bunch of the numbers that he's put up. And he said, you know, I wish at a younger age that I had worked harder, I had taken more swings, I had lifted more weights so that I would have better numbers and I would have been able to contribute more. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I saw that. And, well, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, at some point you learn, you know, we're constantly learning what we don't know. I
mm-hmm.
think, you know, the process of knowledge, the first step in knowledge is learning how much learning, I guess knowledge is the realization of how much you don't understand.
Yeah.
And his is not so unusual. I know Sadaharu has told me, and he's written in his wonderful biography, that basically he wasted the first 3 years of his career just hanging out in Ginza nightclubs every possible chance he had.
Yeah.
I didn't say he wasted. I mean, he was working hard, but he really wasn't devoted to the game. And of course, then he went around that with a vengeance and became the ultimate disciple of the game.
Yeah.
So we all have those elements. But what an amazing career he had, and I remember him getting the job. I wasn't surprised at all when they made him a starting player, because he was a platoon outfielder for 1 year, and it was so obvious that he was the best player he was probably the best player in a really good outfield. And but they just the manager at the time didn't have any other options or didn't have any other ideas. He loved to platoon, and he had stacks of right-handed and left-handed hitters, so that's what he did. And it was
Kanemoto, right?
Right.
And he's not a big guy. I mean, we're not talking. I mean, he's listed at 180 centimeters, which is just under 6 feet. And we're not talking about a guy like Adam Dunn or Big Poppy or somebody huge. This is a guy, you know, who's a regular size, who put a lot of muscle on his body.
He should be real thin, too. When he came up, he was really skinny.
Yeah, and he pumped a lot of iron and put a lot of meat on that frame. And, yeah, it's a...
But, yeah, it was interesting. And then, of course, the, I don't know, does he leave a hole? He certainly leaves a legacy. I think when you're talking about him pulling the ball, and I remember the 2003 Japan series and Tigers batting coach, the Tigers batting coach, Tom O'Malley, coming to me and he's saying, you know, you haven't seen the real Kanemoto because he didn't hit many home runs when he made the transition from Hiroshima to Koshien. And Koshien, first of all, it's a vast park. Second of all, the wind blows in off of Osaka Bay straight in from right field. It's not a bad home run park for right-handed hitters, but it, or at least it didn't used to be. But it was just death for left-handed hitters. And, he had hit high fly balls. Basically, he turned into a, you know, tried to hit everything on a line drive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he just picked it up. But, you know, he said, you haven't seen the real Kanemoto. I says, hey, what we've seen is great. You know, don't worry about, you know, we're not worried about the individual numbers because we know what he's doing.
Right. Right.
But, yeah. So anyway, it was quite amazing. Of course, he turned around and he started putting up awesome home run numbers at Koshien. And then when they remodeled it recently, it made it a little easier for left-handed hitters. Anyway, yeah, so very interesting guy. We're going to miss him. It is sad to see him go, but, of course, that's how you know how good he is because when he's not there, there's not going to be anybody like him.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I did want to mention in his press conference is that when they asked him what record that he was most proud of, what do you think it was? Or did you see that part?
I didn't see that.
But you read it?
No, I didn't see that either. Was it the number of donuts he put on his bat in the on-deck circle?
I've heard about that, that they don't help, that the donuts on the bats don't help this swing. But anyway, the record he said he was most proud of,
right,
was going 1,009 consecutive plate appearances without hitting into a double play, which I didn't know, that he holds a Japan record.
I did not know that either.
Yeah.
Of course, one of those things is if you strike out a bunch of times and you...
Well, actually, what he said was that running out those ground balls when there's a potential for a double play and you hustle down the line, it doesn't help your batting average, but it helps the team win.
Well, yeah, well, that is good for him.
So he didn't mention the strikeouts.
Yep. To be honest, he doesn't strike out that much. He's one of these 70, 80 strikeouts a year guys. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, some guys don't ground into a lot of double plays simply because they so rarely make contact.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, these 1,009 plate appearances, how many of them actually had potential for double plays? Then we can define, we can put that record into context, I think.
Pretty amazing. I think it is pretty amazing, especially, you know, the only time I would say, first of all, well, let's look at it this way. He's got 1,520 career RBIs, which means he had people on base in front of him.
A lot.
A lot. So that's a record. I mean, that's a record. Basically, yeah, I would, you know, okay, he strikes out more than a few people, but he's always run well. He always plays hard. He was a complete player. So many memorable games. You know, when you think of the 2003-2005 Tigers, think of the big, big hits he had. Think of the game in the 2003 Japan Series that he won with a home run. So many what a big presence he was on the field. I remember Hiroki Kuroda's former teammate the other day said that, you know, when he went to the Tigers, what a scary hitter he was. He was like the hitter I was always afraid of him. I never knew what I could throw to him.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a guy who never gave up any home runs at all.
Yeah. Well, good luck to him next year. It'll be interesting. I don't see him as a manager type. I don't really see him as the coaching type. I don't know how he's going to play out the rest of his life here. It's going to be interesting to watch.
Well, yeah, he was, of course, offered a job as a coach. That took about 30 seconds for the team to say, oh yes, but we'll be a coach. We want you to wear a Tigers uniform and have people pay to come and watch the coach.
Right, yeah. But all this talk about him retiring got you to thinking about some other guys who have retired this year, and you posed a question to me.
Well, actually, you know, before we get that far, it didn't take long the news from Kanemoto's. Kanemoto announced his retirement in the afternoon before a game against the Yakult Swallows. And one of the first comments we got was, look, I got 2,000 hits, but I'm not retiring. And that was from Shinya Miyamoto.
Yeah, I saw that on the news too, yeah. I'm not going anywhere. Get that mic out of here.
So the funny thing is he had been considering retiring. He had 1 foot out the door. And then on Sunday, the team said, well, let's see. We're thinking about bringing back the manager if he wants to come. And Monday they made it official. And he thought, well, you know, I think this is Ogawa is a great influence. He's a great players manager. He's very laid back. He's very low key. He's very, to the point. And the players want to play for him. And I think it's his work ethic and his sort of the team, the atmosphere he creates at the Swallows is so strong that, you know, the players want to play for him.
So basically the fact that he was coming back made Miyamoto think, hey, you know, I should continue my playing career.
Yeah, Avenger. Essentially, he says, I want to, you know, give him at least, you know, give it one more shot to celebrate a pennant with him. And, good for him. I remember when Furuta left the Swallows, there was a bunch of players, especially the foreign players, who thought, wow, this team is going to go, you know, straight down the toilet without Furuta. Of course, they were kind of in the toilet with Furuta.
I was going to say, well, straight down as opposed to around in circles before you go?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, the cupboard was pretty bare when Furuta had the team, so it's hard to say. It's really, I have a lot of difficulty evaluating the Swallows of those years. But anyway, so Ogawa is well-liked, and Miyamoto is a great guy to have on your team. So, yeah, good for the Swallows in that respect. So Miyamoto was the first guy to raise his hand and say, you know, don't count me.
Yeah, right. But now you wanted to talk about the guys who had retired already, Takuro Ishii and Hiroki Kokubo. Who else did you want to talk about?
Well, I was thinking about that because, of course, Miyamoto would have been the fourth guy with 2,000 hits.
Ah.
Right, so we've got Ishii and Kanemoto, and I think, well, he's going to stick around. Is there anybody else with two? Well, you know, a guy who might do it, and actually, you made a list. I was only thinking of a couple of people, and it just occurred to me, people thinking of the number 2,000 and people who might retire.
Uh-huh. And Motonobu Tanishige's name came up in your head.
He doesn't have 2,000 hits yet.
He's almost there.
He's behind Rami-chan now. Rami-chan passed him about 3 weeks ago.
Really? I thought he was behind him all season.
I was just talking about him behind, like they were behind all season, because I knew Rami-chan would pass him. Tanishige bats the bottom of the lineup, and he doesn't get as many at-bats, and he doesn't
get as many hits.
He's a 240 hitter instead of a 290 hitter.
Right.
So, he passed him a few weeks ago. He had about a 20 or 25 hit advantage coming into the season. But he's not at 2,000 yet. I don't think he's going to retire because, gosh, they still want him to catch.
Yeah, if he's catching 90% of the games, I don't think he's going to retire. If he was down about 60 or so and really not producing, I would say, yeah, it's possible he would be gone. But even a 236 batting average isn't going to keep him out of that spot.
Think of what a interesting career he's had, because we had the situation last year when you looked at the box score and Tanishige is batting fifth. What's going on here?
He batted cleanup a few times. Yeah, they didn't have any offense last year. They don't have any offense this year, and he's the pudding that shows you the proof.
Not only but the thing is, well, you could bat fifth. It doesn't prove anything other than temporary insanity.
Well, I thought of some other guys who might be on the verge of retirement, let's say. Tell me what you think about my list. So Tanishige, he was up there. I think he's 42 still. Masahiro Yamamoto is another pitcher with the Dragons. He's 47. He pitched well early in the season, but went down to the, I think he got he got injured a little bit. He had something tweaked, and then he went to the farm, and he hadn't been able to work his way back. He finally worked his way back recently, but he didn't pitch all that effectively. And I think he pitched last Sunday, and then this week he didn't get a chance. So that was that.
He was okay, I thought.
Yeah, he was. The numbers were fine.
Oh, I didn't see the game, so I can't say. But he, you know, he was not batting practice.
No, he was not. He was not. He was not great. He was average start. Another Dragon, Hitoki Iwase, I could see him maybe in the offseason considering retirement. He's only 38.
Right.
But, you know, he's not even closing anymore. What's that?
38, but his body's about 45.
Yeah, I think. And speaking of 45, Masao Kida, who's 44.
Yeah, he's well past his number now.
And I think he's made one appearance on the first team this year for the Fighters. I can't remember. I'll look it up as we talk, but yeah, he
was up the roster one day.
Was it for his birthday? I know they like to do that.
Could be, I don't know.
Yeah, he's pitched in one game this year, so he might consider it, or he might be considering it. I'm sorry, another Dragon. The Dragon, remember, we talked about this earlier. I did a story on it, too, that most of the guys in the infield were right around 40. And here's another one, Takeshi Yamasaki, who's 44. And I really think this is his last year, actually.
He has an interesting philosophy, which is every year is his last year.
That's an interesting philosophy. I'm going to die.
That's not what it means.
Well, most of these guys, you take away their baseball careers and, you know, they don't have a lot left. That's why they stick around coaching and they want to be part of the game. It feels like that to me, I should say.
I think Yamasaki will probably try to take up race car driving or something.
another guy who, I don't know, maybe he'll consider retirement is Fumiya Nishiguchi of the Lions. He's 40. And he's pitched okay. He has been pitching well for the past two seasons, but not so much in the second half of this season.
Pitched okay in April and May. And he hasn't pitched since.
Yeah, we haven't seen him in a while, so. But, it's possible he might be considering. And then Tomonori Maeda, we've mentioned him three times now, the Carps, pinch hitter extraordinaire, but he might consider giving it up, but I don't think so, but he's there at 41, he's on the verge.
I mean, he's completely unlikable.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, he has a little role, and he performs it very well, and he's probably getting paid far more than he's worth, but the Carp owner is in love with him, and he's going to play until, you know, they might just bury him in the on-deck circle.
Oh, nice. Don't wipe your feet there. Stop it. All right, well, those are some of the guys I thought of when you handed me this assignment, which was kind of vague because you just said retirees with a question mark. But, you know, I took it and ran.
I was thinking, actually, of, you know, just the guys who were retiring this year, sudden flood. It just occurred to me who hasn't been able to be healthy in several years is Michihiro Ogasawara. You know, it's just that, although he's playing now, actually he's playing now for the, you know, only the second part season. He played early in the season, then he hurt his hamstring. He's had leg problems and knee problems his whole career. And he's a guy you really want to see hit, but he just hasn't been able to hit like, you know, like we expect him. Like he expects himself, I'm sure. I don't think he's going to retire, but Makoto Kaneko, he's another guy who's just got to get healthy eventually, but he's never healthy. He's got back problems. He reminds me a little bit of Iwase. He's not a value marquee player in that respect.
Yeah, but at shortstop, yeah, he's putting a lot more demand on his body trying to play every day and play a very demanding position.
Player who's been undermined by injuries the last 4 or 5 years, so it's just, you know, what you say enough is enough. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys that are on the edge. I mean, just look at these guys who just do nothing year after year after year, but they have jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, guys I like, but.
Come on. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens in the off season. Let's move along to talk about the MVPs for the Central League and the Pacific League. Now, this is a boring story in terms of the Central League. It's the guy who's with the first place team, who's hitting the most, or second most home runs and leading the league in batting average and RBIs. But there's some other things that maybe people don't know that he's doing. I looked in some other numbers, some of the numbers that are off the beaten path, if you will.
Okay.
He's leading the Central League in batting with runners in scoring position at .361. His on-base percentage is .417. He's only struck out 43 times.
Mm-hmm.
He's not even in the top 30 in strikeouts. And then he's leading Japan in game-winning RBIs with 17. To go along with all the other stuff he's doing, Shinnosuke Abe is the hands-down MVP of the Central League, and he makes the prerequisite of playing with the first-place team, and it's the Giants. I mean, I think everybody's already sent their votes in.
Well, yeah, I mean, you did ask the question, why has he been so dominant? Well, you know, I think the answer is he's always been a good player, and good players have these kinds of seasons on occasion. Obviously, you're not gonna be a this. Not something a career 240 hitter is going to do a guy without power can do this. But, the difference between this season and last year is he's played a few more games. You know, he's played, 20 more games. That's the difference. I don't think anybody was close to him as the best player in the Central League last year. Except that, why is he dominant? Well, he'll have enough at bats to qualify for the batting race.
Yeah.
As soon as he does that, people will look at the leaders and go, bam, unanimous MVP.
Yeah.
Dog food this year, the MVP.
Well, the other thing is there's really nobody else in the running. I mean, maybe one of his teammates, but they can't match his production.
Well, okay. There are, yeah, it is hard to pick a, you know, it is hard to pick people out in that group. I mean, who's even comparable to him offensively?
Sakamoto is the only guy I can come up with, and he's just not. I mean, he's there batting average wise. You know, they're only 10 points apart.
Yeah, but okay, we've got a .417 on base percentage against .369. Okay, catcher and shortstop. I mean, okay. Sakamoto is a shortstop. He's not a great shortstop. Lawson is a pretty good catcher, so I'd take him defensively. I think you've got a guy who's essentially, this was my argument last year. Okay, last year, except it's a little more. Last year he was next to Hisayuki Chono, the best hitter in the Central League.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very close. But one, you had a center fielder against a catcher who's a good catcher. Okay, to me that's no matter, even if, you know, he didn't have the bats. This year you have the best catcher in the league who is also the best hitter in the league. And then as soon as he gets enough at bats, bam, he's the MVP. The difference is he's having a better season. He's having a kind of a fluke. I say a fluke season, not as in, it's not what we, you know, it's impossible for him to have, or one would consider it impossible, but it's a fluke because it's a combination of a lot of good things going right for him. He's at the very high end, sort of random chance variation. So, but this is, great players do have great seasons. If you looked at monster seasons over the years, you would find most of them belong to great, great players.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah. All right. Yeah, that conversation is pretty much moot. I think he's going to win it hands down. In the Pacific League, I wanted to throw a surprise name out there. So I think the guy to pick is, or the guy who knows what they're going to vote for.
Well, first of all, if you're a writer, you can't pick the Pacific League until you know who wins.
Exactly. Until we know who wins the league, they can't make a vote. I'm picking Hiroyuki Nakajima, and he looks to me like he's the best guy for this honor because he leads the PL in hits. He went into Sunday's games tied for the lead in doubles, second in runs scored, tied for third in home runs. And not only that, he carried the team in the summer months and really got it going when they were struggling and there wasn't much happening with the Lions and they were floundering. He got hot, right, and he picked them up. And to me, that's the biggest contribution because they were really – They were, what, as many as 10, almost 10 games under. I'm not sure if they actually went to 10 games under. I know they were at 9 when I made a statement on the show. And from that point on, he picked them up and really got them going. And that was without Nakamura Okawari-kun in the lineup. And he was the only guy who really could give them a spark and win some of those games in the summer months, and he did it. So I will pick him whether they win the league, whether they finish in the top three. I think they're going to finish in the top three. I think that's pretty much guaranteed. But it's not a done deal. It's not a done deal, but it's pretty much.
Yeah. I think Nakajima is easily the best in the Pacific League for many of the same reasons. I disagree in saying that he was the only person because there were a couple of – Kuriyama was – okay, he wasn't have the numbers, but it was – we don't want to make it sound like it was Hiroyuki and the Eight Stooges.
Right. It's true.
I mean, Asamura's having an off season, but Kuriyama, until he got hurt, was very solid. He was, in fact, he was the guy. He was the guy who was providing most of the offense in April.
Yeah, he was. What little they had, actually, they had some offense. They weren't pitching well.
Well, there weren't enough guys having enough offense. It was an ugly scene. Anyway, but Nakajima's, okay, who has a bet, my favorite number for offensive players is
OPS?
Is it OPS? On base percentage and slugging?
Yep.
Okay, and, number one in the Pacific League is Hiroyuki Nakajima.
Yeah. But what is he? Was he at 900? I thought he was right around 900. It wasn't?
868.
Yeah, 868, so. On the way to 900.
Well, yeah. I mean, Nobuhiro Matsuda, who's been hurt, so he doesn't really count. The only person who's comparable, even remotely comparable, as a hitter to him in the Pacific League is Lee DeHoe. And he just doesn't have the, who are you going to take? A guy who can play shortstop pretty well or a guy who can play first base without killing
you? The lineman. As Bobby Scales called him, the lineman.
Wichita lineman?
I knew you were going to come up with some. Was that Glenn Campbell?
That's Glenn Campbell. Good job.
Hey, I'm Glenn Campbell. Well, yeah, I knew you were going to come up with that. But, yeah, I didn't think of him so much because I don't like him defensively, and I don't think he adds a lot of value. But he certainly has helped them not finish a despicable last, but it looks like they're going to finish in last anyway, so. What's the value there?
Yeah, no, I see him. I see the MVPs being really obvious. Of course, the problem here again is...
obvious to you and me and our listeners.
But, that was like the thing last year. I mean, how many votes is Abe going to get this year because he's the best hitter in the Central League? And how many votes did he get last year when he was the best hitter in the Central League?
Yeah.
He got one first place vote.
Well, speaking of that, I was looking because I did want to see what was happening here. And last year's Pacific League MVP, Seiichi Uchikawa of the SoftBank Hawks, isn't having that much different a season than he had last year. His batting average is about 40 points off. I mean, he hit 338, I think it was last year. So the batting average is down. But just about everything else is about where it was last year or in some cases better. He struck out fewer times. He's got more walks. He's played in more games because he's been healthy. He has almost as many hits, and I think he'll surpass that total from last year because he's going to play in more games. And he won't even sniff the award this season.
And that's because?
His team is in third place. Oh, horror.
That's two things. One, they're in third place. And two, he didn't deserve the MVP. He only won it because he was playing for the Hawks.
Yeah.
That's, you know, again, this is the same thing. You know, people are ignored because of the team they played for. So anyway, this is, you know, Jason and you and Wayne and I and everyone with half a brain.
At least half a brain, we should say.
I'll take credit for a portion of a half a brain.
Now, another guy I want to give acknowledgement to is Mitsuo Yoshikawa. He's a pitcher for the Nippon Ham Fighters. And I tell you, he's really been valuable for them in the sense that he's been fairly steady once they took the spotlight off of the Handkerchief Prince and gave him a chance.
They're trying to find that spotlight variant because
burned a hole right through that guy.
Because every time Yuki Saito pitches for the Eastern League Fighters, we get the report, and it's always like 5 runs in 4 innings. I'll tell you, I feel a little bad for him, because if you want to take a pitcher and you want to rebuild his confidence, the last place in the world you want to send him to is Kamigaya, where the wind is like a wind tunnel.
And it's hot. It's hot. It's like one of the hottest places in Japan, so the ball carries, right?
It carries out. It jumps out of there.
Plus, you're not talking about the quality defensive players that he's had on the first team to help him, to help bail him out of trouble when he walks people and gives up hits, or, I'm sorry, gives up rockets all over the place.
So, so that is interesting. I think if the Fighters finish first, do you think Yoshikawa is going to be the MVP?
No, I don't think he's going to be the MVP. I just hope he gets a couple of votes here and there. I will give him a second place vote probably. I mean, he's won so many games, and he's not just winning games because he's out there doing a Shota Takeda of the SoftBank Hawks, who's recently just gone like 5 innings, but he's done the minimum work and then a 5 and dive, and then the bullpen picks him up, and he's been picking up wins. But this kid has been pitching. I wanted to talk about him earlier in the season about how well he's been pitching, and he's been lights out. And he's really made a difference for the hole that frankly Yu Darvish left, but also Bobby Keppel's been injured and he hasn't been there. And this guy is finally, they gave him a chance again after asking him to pitch in that 2006 run when he was 19. Was it 2006 or 2007? I think it was 2006.
I believe it was 2007 when he came up.
Yeah, and they asked him to pitch, and he did good work for them, and then all of a sudden he couldn't find any room in their rotation, and he was always on the farm and maybe get a spot start here and there and didn't do all that well. And then this year he's like, give me a chance. And they put the handkerchief in their pocket, and they've got a Yoshikawa who's pitching much, much better.
I would agree with you in many respects, although I think it's an unworthy slight of Shota Takeda's 5 innings. I think what's going on with Shota Takeda is that they basically got a plan not to use him too much.
Well, a couple times I know he did a 5 and dive and he was struggling.
Okay, that may be the case, but again, we're talking about somebody who's
straight out of high school.
Yeah, we're talking about the difference between a 24-year-old and a 19-year-old. Yeah. So we'll just cut him some slack, Jack.
All right. Well, in our last 5 minutes, let's cut a little slack for our Central League and Pacific League leaders. Let's talk about the teams that are looking like they're going to be in the playoffs. I think in the Central League, it's pretty much we know the Giants are going to win. It looks like the Dragons, who locked up a playoff spot on Sunday, are going to be in second place. But the third place fight, which I'm almost ready to call, is between the Swallows and the Carp. And I hate to say I told you so, but I think the Swallows are going to walk away with this. Now, these teams, the Swallows and the Carp, they're separated by 3 games. The Swallows are up in the standings. They're in third. They played a great series last month at Jingu, in which they were 1-1-1. And I don't anticipate a sweep this time, but they're playing down in Hiroshima Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And I think, let's put it this way, 3 games down, even if the Carp sweep, they're still, the best they are is even. If they win 2 out of 3, they're 2 games back.
I'm not going to rule anything out because the, I may have my calculations skewed by, you know, looking at the table from before the games, but at one point, between the two of them, there's either 31 or 33 games left, you know, between those two teams. That's for three games in the standings, you know, 33 games.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and there's just like Judge Wapner used to say, I've read your complaint, and I understand, but I'm going to rule this way. I don't see it. The way today they lost a game committing, and it's what I talked about earlier, they just commit these errors at the most inopportune times. An error to let a runner on, and an error to let him in.
They scored on the ground ball, yeah.
That was later by the pitcher who had an RBI ground up, but they had an RBI, and I watched the play.
The ruling was that he scored on a ground ball. That's why they gave the guy an RBI.
Yeah, the ruling is that he scored on the ground ball, but it should have been an out.
Yeah. Hold on. They scored it a ground out. They scored it they scored it an error because the guy reached base. Now, where was the throw? Was the throw at first base?
No, he whiffed on it. He didn't even catch it. It was a simple grounder right to him, and he didn't even catch it. Higashide.
Yeah, I know who was playing second base. Okay. So, did he have a play at the plate?
No, I don't think so. I mean, yeah, the runner would have scored, technically.
Score on the error, then. And the guy reached base, so it didn't matter. It was a meaningless, the extra error was meaningless.
You say meaningless, I say it's proof that they just don't.
John, you spend a lot of time detailing this error is meaningful. I mean, you were talking about going through and studying the CARP errors to see which ones are meaningful. Well, that second error was meaningless. It had nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, you can say it's meaningless in the scoring and all that stuff.
But you were talking about the first error is meaningful because it let the runner put a runner on second base. Absolutely. The second error, I mean, if you're going to talk about which errors are important and you're going to analyze their defense to see whether they make important errors or, you know, trivial errors. Well, this, you can't just say, well, they made two errors and say the second one let the run in when it didn't. Okay,
I got what you're saying, but my point is they make errors.
Well, they make baskets.
And they play, they play very terrible defense.
Whether
it matters in the scoring or whether it doesn't matter in the scoring. Actually, I'm looking at this. Yeah, okay, there was one out. So my point is they don't catch the ball and they don't throw the ball. So it really, you know, when it comes down to a scoring matter, yeah, sure. It's an RBI ground out and an error.
And the thing is, they were lucky to get out of that inning with just one run.
Yeah, that's true too. They got a double play to get out of the inning. So so we'll see how that goes. I picked the Swallows earlier. I'm sticking with it, and I think those are going to be the. And I actually think the Swallows are going to beat the Dragons in the first round of the playoffs, and then come to Tokyo to represent the Climax first stage winners.
Right, the pre-climaxers.
Yeah, so that's not even going out on a limb because they've been beating up the Dragons all season at Nagoya Dome.
They beat them, although it was close. It was my favorite play. It was one of my favorite playoff series since the Central League started. In fact, the only probably my favorite playoff series in the Central League history so far.
All right. So in our last 2 minutes, we can talk about the Pacific League. I see the Eagles are three games out of a playoff spot with SoftBank, but I don't see them making up that ground either. But they're going to be able to play them head-to-head, so they're going to have showdowns. Other teams have been beating the Hawks.
Oh.
But who's going to win this? Who do you think is going to take this championship?
Darn it.
I'm picking the Fighters.
Are you? Well, I'll pick the Lions then, just to be contrary.
Okay.
I don't have any reason to pick any of them, to be honest. They've all been playing inconsistent. I think they're all quality teams. It's playing with what they have. I mean, they're all missing people. Fighters are a little healthier, I think, but I don't know. Koyama's hurt. He was hurt today. But I don't think he's out, but he was hurt.
I'm not worried so much about that. The reason I'm going to pick the Fighters is just because of the guys they can throw out there on the mound, the veteran guys, the Takedas, the Wolves, the Yoshikawas. I don't know if Yagi going to come back before the season is over?
What was his status?
I think it was a shoulder, elbow, something like that.
Who knows? I mean, he's an interesting cat. So I think that's valid. The Lions are a team of they've put what I guess what you would want to call great character on the field. They play loose. They played a little too loose with the baseball the last 2 days, but I think they can do it. My theory on the difference between the Carp and the Swallows being too close really applies to the Pacific League. Who is the best team right now really doesn't matter.
Nope.
It only matters who gets the best results at this particular, who
wins.
To a large degree, who the breaks favor the most.
Yeah. I see Kishi is kind of a veteran pitcher. We know what he's done in the playoffs. But they've got guys like Kikuchi, they've got Nogami, they've got Togame, they've got guys, I don't know, they're young. So that's why I'm picking the Fighters, but maybe I'll be wrong.
Expect, but I think this pennant race is so close that, and the only reason I would say that the Eagles are a real long shot is because they got to pass three teams. They got to be far luckier than three teams ahead of them, and that's a tough call. Same with the Marines. I think the Marines, I don't know. I mean, the Marines could even win. I mean, one of those teams could just go on the hot streak. The Marines could turn into the Marines of 2010.
Or the Marines of April. They didn't have to go back that far.
Yeah, 2 weeks. And bam, there they are. Yeah. So, again, one of the top three teams will win it. That's just based on, that's the way the dice are stacked right now. I don't think they've got essentially, 15, 16 games to play, and the luckiest team's going to win.
Yep, and I can't wait. And I also can't wait for you guys to send us some letters, some more MP3s. Now, we are going to go through our WBC teams, so please send those in by email. Send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and then send your MP3s with questions, and we'll play it on the show. Thank you very much for listening. Good job, Jim.
Thank you, John, and thank you all for listening, and we're looking forward to hearing from you specifically.
All right. Enjoy your baseball.